Thanks again to everyone that's done a reading and helped us open the meeting. I welcome those that have joined us since we first started. And warm welcome to any visitors, a massive welcome to any newcomers in the room tonight. I hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we do have a speaker this evening, I'm delighted to say. I'm going to hand you over to Jay, who's going to introduce them. So Jay, over to you, my friend.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Our speaker tonight, I met on the down at NA at home. She showed up. She's been doing service down there since she showed up. She's been really great at that, and I appreciate the fact that she did show up. And she used to live in California, and now she lives. I will let her tell you about that journey. She now lives on the East Coast. And I've listened and watched and enjoyed what she's had to share. And I've watched her grow as an individual over these last couple of years and go through some things that we go through. I mean, medical issues, all kinds of, I mean, life on life's terms. And she's handled it very well. I mean, I've watched her do that. And I think that's a credit to the fact that she continues to come to meetings on a regular basis and continues to do the things that we talk about in our basic text, which is going to meetings and doing, working with people and doing all the necessary things to stay involved in this program. And without further ado, Brenda, would you share with us for 40 to 45 minutes or whatever you're comfortable with? And I look forward to hearing your experience, strength, and hope.
Oh, thank you, Jay. Hi, everybody. I'm an addict named Brenda.
Hi, Brenda.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Hello, everyone. It's an honor to be here. It's always an honor to be asked to participate. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I was using, I was never asked to participate with anything. In fact, most of the time people would specifically not invite me places. So to be invited anywhere is always a pleasure and an honor today, and I recognize that. And you know, I'm just really glad to be here. Jay, thank you for that introduction. Jay and I have been doing service together, and we attend, I call it my international home group in Sydney, Australia, and that's where I met Jay. And it's just been an honor to do service with Jay. And I met Steve there, and so it's really great to see you, Steve. I haven't seen you in a long time. First I want to start with just saying that if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, welcome. Steve said that we hope you hear something here today, whether it's with me or anybody else that shares, that encourages you to keep coming back and let you know that you don't ever have to use again. I mean, that's the most important part of Narcotics Anonymous, is that we don't ever have to use again. We have, we have a promise here that any addict, and it says any addict, it doesn't qualify that, it doesn't make distinctions between addicts, it just says any addict, lose a new way to live. And I'm here to tell you that that has been my experience in Narcotics Anonymous. My experience, strength, and hope is that I am that addict. I'm that addict that got here broken and found out that I could get clean, stay clean, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life. Now, that didn't happen all at once, and it continues to happen today, in my life today. That promise stays true today. Jay and I were joking earlier this morning on the phone about how just what's happened in the last year I could talk for 45 minutes about. It's been a difficult year for my recovery. But the same principles of recovery apply in my life today? And November 22nd, 1987. So that means that we just celebrated 36 years clean. I'm so amazed by that. It kind of is surreal in many ways. First of all, at 36 years has really, a friend of mine in California always says it takes 36 years to get 36 years. And, you know, it's been a journey. It's been a journey and it's a lot to share, but I say all that to say that it all starts the same way every day is that I have today. That means just have today. And 36 years is a whole lot of just for today's put together. It's a whole lot of no matter what's put together. And I didn't understand any of that when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I got to Narcotics Anonymous broken. Like I said, I got here. I didn't know how to stay clean. I tried to stay clean. I knew that I was an addict. That was one thing that I am grateful that I knew when I got here. There was no question in my mind that I was an addict because I could not stay clean on my own. That no matter what it was doing to my life and no matter what I saw, the consequences of my using, I could not stay clean on my own, even though I had tried. And it wasn't until I got to Narcotics Anonymous and I got here kind of interestingly, before I became unemployable. I became unemployable in my active addiction, for sure. But before, my last job that I had was in a manufacturing company in Philadelphia. I was born and raised in Philadelphia and in the States. In fact, kind of when I look back on it today, it's just a blessing that none of those helicopters that I ordered parts for ever fell out of the sky. But I worked there. I was struggling. I was using all the time. I was losing my job. But there was a guy there that I used to work with, and he used to watch me, and he would say all the time, when you're ready for a new way to live, let me know. And I would cuss him out and tell him to mind his business and tell him I didn't have a problem. My problem was him. If he would leave me alone, I wouldn't have a problem. But he would just so graciously, I recognize today, would always say to me, when you're ready for a new way to live, let me know. And when I was finally broken enough, when I couldn't get high enough, right? Like there was a point when it wasn't even working anymore. And unemployed, unhoused, living on the streets of Philly in the wintertime. And I had burned all the bridges. I had nothing left. And I remembered that guy and I remembered what he said. And I found him because he was always in the same place. He was always doing the right thing, right? You knew where he was. He wasn't like me where I was dodging in and out of subway systems and, you know, avoiding people and walking on the other side of the street and not coming out during the day and those kind of things, right? Like I knew where to find him and I asked for help and I ended up, in a rehab. And so I thank God for him. And his name was Pat. And I thank God for Pat, who carried the message before I even knew that there was a message, right? He carried the message of recovery before I even knew it. And then I thank God for H&I, hospitals and institutions, because they came into that rehab. They came into that program. And back then in the 1900s, right? In the 80s, you went to rehab and like, if you were lucky, you stayed there for 6 months, right? And Narcotics Anonymous came into that rehab and they brought meetings in there. And there were people that were involved in hospitals and institutions. There were people that, you know, that we call H&I. And they came in voluntarily on their own time as part of their recovery to carry a message of recovery to people like me. And I don't remember much about that rehab because I was pretty broken mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. But I remember those meetings and I remembered the feeling that I got when I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting that was an H&I meeting in that rehab. And they told me out, go to meetings. And so when I got out, I went to a meeting you know, what else was I going to do? I didn't have anything else. I didn't have a place to live. I didn't have food. I didn't have, you know, a job. So I went to a meeting. And I often say that everything I learned in the first 30 days of being in Narcotics Anonymous was everything I needed to know about staying clean. And that it's just been a process of repeating those things over and over again and applying them to new situations in my life. So when I first got here, I had nothing. And I was so afraid I was going to get loaded. And I had such an obsession to get high. And I thought I was never going to make it. And I would go to these meetings and they would tell me that it was going to be okay. And they would tell me, don't use no matter what. That was the first thing I heard. Don't use no matter what. And I remember how profound that sounded, right? Like, don't use no matter what. Like, if I could have figured that one out, like, I probably didn't need use, guys, right? But they said, don't use no matter what. And then I heard things in the meetings, and that's what I did. And I didn't use no matter what. And there were many, like, of those early days where I just had to sit on my hands and I had to do it. You know, we talk about doing it a day at a time. Sometimes I had to do it an hour at a time. Sometimes I had to do it like 5 minutes at a time, just not to use until the next meeting. And then I heard things like, go to a meeting every day for 90 days. Now today we say do a 90 and 90, right? Everybody says do a 90 and 90. But back then they said do a meeting every day for 90 days. And I was so grateful that they said it like that, because if they had told me, and I share this all the time, if they had told me to do a 90 and 90, I would have started to do math in my head, right? I would have done, and then I don't have to go to a meeting on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. And then I can go to like a meeting on Wednesday and then maybe miss Thursday. And before you would know it, I'd be using again, because I got loaded every day. I got high every day. So I needed to be a meeting every day. And they would say, go to a meeting every day for 90 days. And if this isn't working for you, we will refund your misery. And something beautiful happened for me in that initial 90-day period. And I don't know exactly when it happened, but it was in that first 90 days where just not using no matter what and going to meetings every day, I started, like, we talk about hope, right? The message of hope and the promise is freedom. And I started getting hope. Like, I believe you were staying clean. I believe the people in the meetings were staying clean, but I was still so afraid that I was never going to stay clean for the long haul, right? And, but in that first 90 days, I started getting some hope that, you know, I was getting it. I was getting a couple of days clean back to back. And I thought, maybe I can do this. Maybe I really can do this. And that was the first shot of hope that I got, right? The first shot of hope that said, maybe a dope fiend like you who lived on the streets and who was a foster kid and who was gay and who, you know, thought that, you know, I had nothing coming. Maybe somebody like me could stay clean. And so I just kept going. I kept going. And then I started hearing some other things, right? We do a lot of repetition in Narcotics Anonymous. Like, we read the readings over and over again at every meeting. We, you know, we say the same slogans, you know, like every day, like keep coming back, it works, and all those things. And we do that because I needed to hear it over and over again for it to start sinking. So then I heard things like, okay, get a home group. You've been coming here now, get a home group. And I was like, what's a home group? And you guys said a home group is a place where you go all the time and where you begin to develop relationships with people in those meetings. And you get a commitment there and you do service at the home group. And you know, it's a place where people get to know you. That's what you guys explained to me. So that if I don't show up, people are wondering where I am, right? And when I come, how you been going? And so I got a home group, right? Because like all these things, like I had no other option. I had no other option. So I had the gift of desperation when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, which meant that I was so broken when I got here. I was willing to do what you told me to do. Like it never occurred to me not to do it, because nothing I ever did worked. And just by going to meetings, I was staying clean. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do what you guys tell me to do. And I wanted what you had. You know, you were definitely not living the life that I was living when I got here. And I wanted some freedom. I wanted not to be chained to my addiction. You know, I often talk about my mom because my mom, you know, my mom raised me. She wasn't my birth mother, but she raised me. And she's 95 years old today. And she, when I was using and I would come around, she would just shake her head at me and just go, And I had so much shame about that, that I stopped coming around. Who took me in and raised me as one of her kids was ashamed of me. Like, then I believed I was a piece of shit. And you guys gave me that hope that maybe I could do this and maybe I could be more like you. Because, you know, the people that I met when I first got here weren't pieces of shit. They were doing this recovery thing. They were working. They were committed. They showed up when they said they were going to show up. They, you know, they called back when they said they were going to call back, like all those things. And I wanted to be more like that instead of the person I have become, the shell of a person I have become. And so I got a home group. And then I heard things like, you know, be of service. I said, it's okay. We'll tell you. And see, this was, again, this was in back in the day in the 1900s when we used to smoke at in-person meetings. And so they said, okay, we'll go clean the ashtrays. And I was like, okay, I was not too proud to do anything because I had no pride left, right? So I cleaned ashtrays. And this amazing thing happened, right? Now I felt like I was a part of this. Like I was really a part of my home group. I wasn't just sitting around taking up space. Like I was actually contributing. It was only ashtrays, right? But now I felt like I was doing something positive and being productive and being a part of, right? That's the amazing thing about service. I believe so much in service to Narcotics Anonymous because it helps me feel a part of this thing. And over my years in recovery, I've moved, you know, Jay said, you know, I moved across the country in my recovery. I've moved back to Philadelphia just recently in this last month. And each time I've made a move, I keep applying those same things. Like the first thing I do is I need to get a home group in my local area and I need to get a commitment to that home group, right? These are the things that keep me connected to Narcotics Anonymous. And, so I had my service commitments and, you know, and then I heard get a sponsor and, you know, men stick with the men and women stick with the women. So I looked around the room and I saw the cutest woman in there and I said, she'll be my sponsor. Now I have to explain something. Like I didn't ask her to be my sponsor. I didn't know you were supposed to do that. But here's what happened. Next week when I went to my home group, they asked me, did you get a sponsor? I'm like, yeah, she's sitting right over there. And again, I felt a part of, like I was doing this thing. It says in our literature that we do it to the best of our ability. And back then that was the best of my ability, right? And I still felt like I was doing this deal called recovery. And that poor woman sponsored me for about a month and she didn't even, like I never talked to her. She had no idea she was sponsoring me, but boy, did I feel like I was a part of. I finally figured out what a sponsor is, by the way. And then I went up and asked this woman who had 5 years clean. To us back in 1987, 5 years clean was like we thought she ran Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because that was a miracle to us. The miracle was that we were all staying clean just for today. And so I asked her to sponsor me and she said, call me every day for 30 days and I'll think about it. And I was like, who does this bitch think she is, right? That's what I said in my head. What I said out loud was, okay. And that was hard. That was hard to call every day for 30 days because I didn't have a phone. We didn't have cell phones. I had to find a phone booth and I had to make sure I had change on me. So I had to hustle to get money to make a phone call to my sponsor every day for 30 days. And, but I did it. I did it because I didn't want to go back to where I came from. It talks about in our literature that there are times when the desire to be clean is stronger than the desire to use. And that the only requirement for membership in our third tradition says that we have the desire to be clean. That's it. It doesn't even say that we have to be clean when we get here or that we have to get clean right away when we're here. But I was grateful enough that I had the desire to be clean and that I was staying clean. And I had the desire to be a part of because I didn't want to go back to using. And I had the desire to get a sponsor and call her every day from a phone booth because I didn't want to get loaded anymore. And I need to say, too, that there was a whole lot of grace involved in those early days. And throughout my recovery, there's been a lot of grace involved because, you know, recovery, I used to hear people say, you know, recovery isn't for those who need it. Because if it was for those who needed it, there we would have like 10,000 people on this call right now, right? And it's not even for people that want it. I've known a lot of people over the years who have wanted to get clean who aren't here today. Recovery is for those who do it. And so I just kept doing it. And so then I heard things like, we have steps here, work some steps. You need to work some steps if you want to change, you know. And it took me a while to start working steps because I was really, look, it was everything I could do to just show up and make it from one meeting to the next and not use in between meetings and do my little service commitment and have a home group and call my sponsor every day. I was still like, you know, couch surfing, we call it, right? Just hopping from people's couches. I had nowhere to live. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any transportation. And it was really, really hard. But I had hope. I had the hope that I was going to be okay because you told me I was going to be okay. Nobody ever said life was going to get better. Nobody ever said it was going to be great. Nobody ever promised me that I was going to get a job or a car or anything like that, but they told me I was going to be okay. And every day that I stayed clean, I was a little bit more okay, right? And so I finally started working some steps. And for me, you know, I talk about Bob B. Bob B. is, his story's in the original basic text. I think it's still in there today. Yes, it is. It's the, I found the only NA meeting in the world. That's his story. And he talked all the time. I heard him share one time at my very first convention. I had 6 months clean and my sponsor took me to Newark, New Jersey for a convention. And Bob B. was the main speaker. And he talked about baking a cake, that the steps are like baking a cake. You know, like for me, if I want to bake a cake, I go to the grocery store and I buy a box, right? That's how I bake. I buy a box that has a cake picture on it and I bring it home. And Bob B. says, if you want your cake to look like the cake on the box, one step at a time. And that's how you bake a cake. And that's how we work steps. In order, one step at a time. If I want what you have to offer, then I'll do what you do to get it. And I am so grateful that when I got here, people talked all the time about step work, that step work was the key to change. And so I started baking my cake of step work. I've done steps numerous times in my recovery because I believe that this process continues. I believe that I don't graduate from Narcotics Anonymous. And the truth is, new things have happened for me that I've had to apply all these same basic principles over and over again. So let's see. I want to talk about my early home group. My early home group, when I had a couple years clean, it was around 1989, and I was in Philly, and I want to talk about when I was homeless and I was on my own and I was a foster kid and then I emancipated from being in foster care and I was about 17 years old and I found myself on the streets. There was a group of people, once I got clean, who scooped me up in recovery. And when I went to my first meeting, they were there and they were the, other previous homeless queer kids, right? They were the black trans women in early recovery. They were the black queer folk in recovery. And that was my home group. And they scooped me up. And I'm a white Jewish foster kid, right? So they scooped me right up. And these were the people that taught me all of this. And these were, you know, the woman that sponsored me, was just an amazing black woman who didn't take any shit from anybody. And I was surrounded by these incredible people. And around 1989, AIDS came through Philadelphia and killed off almost my entire home group. And so from about 1989 to about 1991, we lost 3/4 of our home group from AIDS. And I spent a lot of time grieving that. And I spent a lot of time taking care of my brothers and sisters when they were dying. And I took a lot of time feeling guilty. And I took a lot of time wondering who were my people now and where was I going to find my community again? And how was that going to work? And the principles of Narcotics Anonymous were my answer to that. You told me in the fourth tradition that we all belong. You told me in the third tradition that the only requirement for membership was a desire to stop using. You promised me that any addict could get clean, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And that was my first, like, it was around that time, the same time when my brother, my older brother, committed suicide. And so I had all this loss and all this grief. And I kept thinking, why am I doing this, right? But you told me, you kept promising me, Narcotics Anonymous promised me that I could learn how to live a new way of life. And that the principles that any addict can get clean. And that if we say any addict, then we need to make room for all the addicts. And so I kept coming back. I kept coming back. And I kept doing the deal. And I kept working steps. And I kept not using no matter what. And those were my first early experiences of the no matter what's that can happen around here. So when I had around 9 years clean, I got married. I went to college. I finished college. You know, like I'm totally fast forwarding, right? Like this is this new way of life, right? You stick around here long enough and you stay clean and shit starts to happen. Things start to happen in life. Like I started learning how to go to work every day. I learned how to go to work every day by learning how to keep commitments in Narcotics Anonymous. You just taught me that. So I was able to get a job. I was able to show up. I was able to suit up and show up every day like you taught me how to do in recovery. I was able to work with other people because I sat in business meetings and learned how to do area service. And so it taught me that I could apply traditions in my relationships. And so I went and got married and we started raising a kid together. And then we, you know, decided to move out to California. And I had never lived anywhere in my entire life outside of like a 15-mile radius of Center City, Philadelphia. So we went out to California to try something new. And here's what I found out. You take you with you no matter where you go, right? So I took me with me all the way to California. And I found out that the same things in recovery apply. That I had to show up and say, I'm new today. I don't know where I'm going. Can I get a ride to a meeting? I need phone numbers. I need a sponsor out in California because back then, you know, we didn't have Zoom. We didn't have Blue Jeans platforms. We didn't have all these abilities that I knew of to stay connected. So I had to go find a new sponsor in California. So my first sponsor not the first one that I had for 30 days that wasn't really my sponsor, but the woman that had 5 years, Imani, she sponsored me until I came to California when I had about 9 years clean. And then I found a sponsor, Jay, and she was my sponsor until she passed away when I was moving to Northern California. So I got to be with her while she passed when I had about, probably about 18 years clean. And then I moved to Northern California and did all the same things. Went to a meeting every day for 90 days. I raised my hand and said, I'm new to the area and I need phone numbers and I need a sponsor and all those same basic principles that we repeat all the time here are all the same things that applied. And I got connected. I was of service right away. I got in service and got connected. And so, you know, the formula, the recipe is the same, but he didn't talk about when he talked about baking a cake. And that was when you work these steps and you work them in order. If you want what we have, you'll do what we do. And you do all this work and you're of service and you're sponsoring other people and you have a sponsor and all these things that I was doing. What I didn't know about the cake baking process is that you, once you put all the ingredients in, you pour it in a pan and then you put it in the oven and you have to wait for it to bake. And to me, that's that part of recovery when it talks about finding a new way to live, right? It's that part where we do all this stuff that's suggested in Narcotics Anonymous, and then we get to wait for the results. And there were many times where I would do all these things and then shit started going wrong because life on life's terms will show up if you stick around here long enough. And I'd be like, wait, what happened? I did all this stuff. And my sponsor in Southern California, Barbara J, would say, well, now you get to wait for the results. And that was that part of the process that was probably, that's been the hardest for me over the years, is waiting for the results of my efforts. And life on life's term. You know, there was a time in my recovery when I moved to Southern California where I had all the things, right? I had gotten a good job. I had gotten a state job and I had bought a house and I had a nice Buick LeSabre. And, you know, I thought I was just doing great. And it talks in our Living Clean book, it talks about how, you know, sometimes when we, you know, and it also talks about in our Just for Today readings about the foundation of recovery, right? The foundation are all those things we talk about, the going to meetings, being of service, getting and using a sponsor, working steps, helping others, right? Doing all those things, that's my foundation. Those are the things that I learned when I first got here in my first 30 days. That's my foundation that I build my recovery house on. And that if I put any of those things in front of my recovery, then those will be the first things that I lose. And if I'm lucky, I can hold on to my recovery. So I've had life on life's terms show up over the years where I've had things, I've lost things, got married, got divorced, raised kids, had, you know, took in my... I was never able to have children of my own, so I raised a lot of other kids, right? So my first wife and I, we raised our son together, and then one of my birth sisters, in fact, most of my birth family are all active addicts, and my birth sister was losing custody of her kids, and so I took the twins in and raised them as my boys, and they became my boys, and you know, and then they were growing up and they were going to jail and they were getting loaded and all these things and life on life's terms. And the same principles apply. I don't use no matter what. I go to meetings on a regular basis. I'm of service to Narcotics Anonymous. I learn how to be of service to the community around me, my family, I call them my young queer kids that come into recovery. You know, my sponsees, right? All those same things apply. If you ever are in a load of shit about life on life's terms, go help a newcomer. That's what I was told. And here's what happens to me when I do that. When I go help a newcomer, when I'm in my own shit, all of a sudden I forget about my own shit because now I'm helping a newcomer. And there's a miracle that happens when you're helping a newcomer that the principles of recovery come forefront in my brain, right? That's what happens to me. When I'm helping a newcomer, all of a sudden I remember all the principles of recovery because I'm sharing with a newcomer. And then I get out of my own way, right? And to me, that's where my higher power lies. My higher power lies of recovery. And so I've learned over the years that these principles continue to apply. I continue to work steps. I had an entire career And the last 3 years have been different for me because at the height of the pandemic, I retired after a full career. It was amazing that a dope fiend like me from Southwest Philly, who lived, towards the end of my addiction in subway systems and without shoes on my feet, could learn these tools that we have available to us and be able to raise children, be able to be a productive member of society, to be able to retire from a job with a pension. Like, that's crazy to me, right? I stay so grateful for this life that I have today. So I retired, and by the way, I got married again. So my second wife and I, we've been married for 7 years now. She was my best friend in recovery for like the last 20 years. She's been my best friend, and we ended up getting married. It's really great to marry your best friend. And so after I retired, we started talking about coming back to Philly, coming back home, because half of our kids were here and the other half were in California. And so we started talking about coming home because the kids that were really struggling were back here in Philly. And I have a twin sister, and my twin sister has a lot of physical disabilities. And so we talked about coming here to support her more, and because I miss her. And so we started talking about that process, and then something else that happened. I've been an athlete my whole life, and in recovery we talk about lost dreams awaken. And so in recovery I went back to being an athlete, and it was such a joy. Like I've cycled, I bicycle, like, 100-mile days and stuff like that. I do centuries, and I rode my bike one time from San Francisco to Los Angeles, which is about 564 miles. It's not about, it's exactly 564 miles. And and I would I boxed. I was a kickboxer, and so very, very athletic. But I did a lot of damage to my body as well. And also that career that I retired from, I worked in law enforcement, which is also a miracle. So I beat my body up a lot. And so after I retired and we started talking about coming home, I'd gotten my hips checked out because I'd been in a lot of pain for a while. And they said, "Oh yeah, you need two brand new hips." And I was like, "Two?" Like, at the same time, they said, "No, we're going to do one at a time, but yeah, we're going to give you some new hips." And then the pandemic happened, so everything got put on hold. So this past year, I got two brand new hips, and I've and it's the same thing recovery teaches me. I had to follow direction. I had to my sponsor that I've had now since I moved up to Northern California, she's been my sponsor now since 2006. And we keep, and by the way, she has 49 years clean, and I want what she has, so I do what she does. And so we worked really closely together about my surgeries. I followed all the doctor's orders. I stayed in close contact with my recovery. I stayed online in meetings. I did another go to a meeting every day for 90 days, right? I did all those things, the same things. I worked a whole brand new set of steps. And then in February, one of our twin boys, he died. He died in February. He was trying to get clean. He went into a rehab, and a couple days into the rehab, he had a massive heart attack. His poor heart just couldn't take it anymore. His mother, the twins' mother, my sister, died last year of a drug overdose. She died and was left in the projects in Philadelphia. And she wasn't found for about a week after that. And our one twin just nosedived after that. And I was powerless. I was completely powerless. Like all of our children know. They all know what recovery is. I used to drag their butts to meetings when they were little, you know, when they were like 10 and 11, and I would take them to meetings, and they know about my whole story. They know about our whole family. They know about their mother. Their father died of a drug overdose. Most of our family is dead. Most of our bio, I am now the matriarch of our family. My twin sister keeps saying we are the matriarchs. I'm like, I'm 15 minutes older than you, so I am the matriarch of the family. So our boys know, they all know. And I was powerless over his addiction. There was nothing I could do to save him. There was nothing, and trust me, if there was anything that I could do to save him, I would have. My brother that I adored so dearly when I had 2 years clean, who committed suicide, could not stay clean. And he thought his only option was to end it. I can't save them. I can carry a message, and I am completely powerless. And so we flew back home to Philly, and we took care to properly lay my son to rest. And then we took his partner of 15 years, Beth, and we took Beth and their 15-year-old daughter, Lee, our granddaughter, and we took them back to California with us because, as we know, what life looks like when it's involved in active addiction, everything crumbled around them. And so we took them home to California, and we started. I had one more surgery to go through. And after that surgery, we made plans to come home. His twin brother is so ecstatic that we're home. We landed about 3 weeks ago here in Philly. And I can't tell you what a full circle it feels like for me. It really feels like a full circle. And here's all I know. When we got our daughter-in-law and our granddaughter, we scooped them up because they have no one. And we scooped them up and we said, we got you. And I sat down with them and I said, look, I don't know how we're going to do this. I don't know what our life is going to look like. But what I do know is what my recovery has taught me over and over again is that we can do this together. Every time life has shown up in my recovery, we have done this together. Right? And so now I get to create this multi-generational safe space for my kids and my grandkids. We got a big old house in Northwest Philly with lots of bedrooms so all the kids can land, that everybody has a home that they know that they can come to. And it's all that, you know, I think back to when those early days when I had nowhere to go and I was jumping from couch to couch and I had nothing. And, you know, we would do the meeting after the meeting, right? They would tell me, come early, stay late. So that's what I did because I had nothing else to do. I had nowhere else to go. So I'd come to meetings early and I would make sure the ashtrays were super sparkling clean, and I would, you know, go to the bathroom before the meeting started because that's what you guys taught me to do, so I don't have to get up and interrupt the whole meeting. And then I would, you know, do all those things, and I would feel ashamed because I had no money to put in the Seventh Tradition. And you all told me that the only requirement for membership was the desire to stop using, so keep coming back, and I did. And then I'd go to the meeting after the meeting, which was always at a diner. And in Philly, that's how we do it. We all go to the diner. We make a lot of noise. None of us have any money. We buy a lot, you know, we get like a lot of French fries and chocolate milkshakes. And if you had a job, you got a hamburger or a cheesesteak, right? And so we would all make a lot of noise, and the waitresses couldn't stand us because we didn't know any principles yet, and we never left tips, and we all had to learn how to do that because we were all just getting clean together and running amok, and but staying clean. And I remember that I would sit there and I wouldn't eat because I had no money. And the woman who soon became my sponsor, the one who said, call me every day for 30 days and I'll think about it. She would say, Brian, are you hungry? And I would say, no, I'm good. I'll get something. I'm fine. And I was so ashamed. And every time she would say, Brent, get something to eat. It's okay. I'm like, no, I'm good. I ate earlier. Right. And, one day we were at the diner after the meeting and she got a big plate of French fries and she pushed it in front of me and she said, you need to eat. And I finally got honest, right? That we talk about honest, open, and willing. And I finally got honest with this woman and I said, I don't have any money. I don't have anything. Like I'm hustling, still. And she said, baby, it's okay. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. And she said, one day, you're going to be able to do this for somebody else. So have a French fry. And I'm going to tell you that was the best French fry I'd ever eaten in my entire life. And I always get choked up when I think about that because when I remember that, because it was the first time that somebody had done something for me without any expectation, except I would give it away to keep it. Right? That I would give it back one day. That was it. That was the only expectation. Just give it to somebody else who needs it one day. And like today, I feel that full circle, like where I'm able to provide for my family, recognizing that I am still powerless over my addiction, over their addiction, over everybody else's addiction, but that if I don't use no matter what, and I go to meetings on a regular basis, and I stay in service to Narcotics Anonymous, and I have a sponsor, and I work steps, and I give it away, and I encourage others to do the same, and I sponsor other people, and I make people feel welcome, that it's going to be okay, that I'm going to be okay, and that I have a chance. You know, my sponsor today, I've had these three sponsors my entire recovery. We don't count the first one, but Imani when I was in Philly, Barbara J when I was in Southern California, and then Snoopy, who's my sponsor today. She was my sponsor the whole time I was in Northern California and still is sponsoring me today. And Snoopy always says, I may be the only basic text that anybody will ever read. And so what am I doing today to demonstrate that this miracle of recovery works? That this program of Narcotics Anonymous and the principles of Narcotics Anonymous works? That sometimes the only thing I've done right is not use in a day. I have stolen things in recovery. I've had affairs in recovery. I've spent way too much money and have lost everything in recovery. I've cussed people out in recovery. I've done a lot of wrong things in recovery. But there's one thing that now that I've done longer than anything else in my entire life. And that's stay clean. And you taught me how to do that. I'm going to close with this. I do this a lot lately because it's really important to me. But a few years ago, there was a youngster in recovery and she was getting a year clean. She was celebrating a year clean. And she said, I have a year clean today. I've never been clean this long, so I have no idea what's coming next. And I'm just going to keep coming back. And I'm here to say I have 36 years clean today. I've never been clean this long. I have no idea what's coming next. So I'm just going to keep coming back. Thank you all so much for letting me be here and for honoring me with sharing this meeting with me. And that's about it for me. I'm going to shut up now. Thank you.